Hey guys, welcome to The Whole Veterinarian. My name is Dr. Stacy Cordovano, and you know we've got some stuff going on in this profession of ours. On this podcast, I will speak with outside-of-the-box thinkers to hear new ideas on ways to improve our day-to-day life. I want veterinarians to learn to be happier, healthier, wealthier, and more grateful for the life that we've created. Now let's get started. My guest this week is Dr. Charisse Sullivan Henry. I was really lucky to be paired randomly with Charisse as my roommate at Penn State University, and we've been friends for the past 20 years. Charisse earned her master's in veterinary science at Tuskegee University in 2006, and she earned her DVM from Cornell University in 2010. She's a relief veterinarian in the Houston area and is also a board member of Sparkles for Life, which is a nonprofit that helps women deal with infertility and delayed parenthood. Thank you so much for joining me today, Charisse.
Thanks, Stacy. It's an honor and a pleasure to join you today.
How are you?
Doing well.
I'm going to ask you that again because there's a lot going on. How actually are you doing?
Well, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, just kind of rolling with the punches and kind of sticking in there, you know?
Yeah.
It's a challenging time right now with the things that are going on as far as racism and racial injustice in the world, political issues. So it definitely bears a toll on, I think, us all. But one thing is that we as a people, you know, we as American citizens, and speaking for myself and my culture, we as Black people are very resilient, and we're going to make it through it.
I certainly don't think this is a place to be teaching anyone, and I don't expect you to take your time to teach anyone. I think, if anything, I've learned in the past couple weeks that we as white people need to really lean into ourselves to do some education. But before we get into your side project and why I really brought you on here, I did just want to give you an opportunity to, you know, talk to my pretty much white veterinarian population, if you have anything to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a really good time for our profession as veterinarians, specifically, largely us as a country, but specifically in veterinary medicine, to kind of make a shift as far as what we perceive our society to be, meaning that we have to really recognize that there are structural issues that are pervasive within our society when it comes to racism and racial injustice. We're seeing that nowadays it's being recorded. So it's really being thrown in everyone's face with the killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, and the list goes on and on. Trayvon Martin, a child, Corinne Gaines. There's just so many to name. You know, these are people. These are people who have families. Now, me as a new mother, me as a wife, me as a Black woman, there's a lot of stuff to ingest here. There are concerns for our safety, and we've really got to make a change because we're relying on a lot of folks to really guide the way as far as the future is concerned. You know, you never know who Trayvon Martin would have been had he had the chance to be alive today. He would have graduated from high school, and who knows what his future would have held. So it's just a time of reflection as well as a time of change. So I'm hoping to see our profession really get on board, particularly the ABMA. I'd like to really see them acknowledge that this is not just a diversity and inclusion issue. This is a racial injustice issue. And we've had racism that has been evident and pervasive within our profession for a very, very long time. And we need to address it. We need to hit it head on. And it's uncomfortable. These are uncomfortable conversations that we just have to have. I'm looking forward to all of us, and we really need allies in this profession, such as yourself, to amplify these voices and really be willing to help everyone make a change.
Yeah, for sure. I've realized how easy it is to say I'm against racism, but to stay inside my very white insulated bubble. And I'm definitely dedicated to working hard to get outside of that bubble as much as I can. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. Sure. I appreciate your candidness. I want to talk mostly about a new passion side project that you have, My Black IVF Story. Can you tell us what that is and explain a little bit about how you got to that idea?
Yeah, really, to put it simply, I was looking for IVF and infertility resources when I was going through my journey. And quite simply, I just didn't see people who looked like me. That was really important to me. And with this journey, there's a lot of periods of isolation. Infertility, it feels like you're the only one going through it and nobody else is talking about it. I was just grabbing for straws online, anybody that I could find. While there were a lot of resources out there of people who were sharing their story, just not that many of them were people of color. At that time, I decided that I would start to gradually open up and kind of share my story. I went to a brunch and I met two Black women who are cousins. Shout out to my friend at Chiggy's World on Instagram. And those two cousins were talking about how they were going through the process of IVF and infertility. And that was the first time I connected with anybody who was of color who was going through an infertility struggle. I thought to myself, wow, like, they're so brave. I can't believe that they are actually standing up in front of a brunch really talking about this. And I thought, you know, I could never be that brave. And then later on, I said, well, maybe I can't be that brave now, but maybe later on I will be. So I began to just document my journey. I started making videos and doing journals. And at a certain point, I gathered the strength and decided that I would share it. I started little by little and eventually started my Instagram. And now just this week started my YouTube channel.
That's awesome. I imagine while that was super scary, was it also a little bit cathartic to journal and document while you were going through it?
Definitely. It was very healing for me, not only in the moment to be able to get all of these feelings out, even if I was just talking to my cell phone, even if I was just writing in my journal, but even later on, kind of reflecting on my journey, like, wow, I was actually strong enough to make it through that tough time. So I experienced a lot of growth. I'm definitely grateful for that.
That's amazing. Would you be willing to share a little bit about your fertility story and how you got to IVF?
Yeah, sure. There's kind of the story of me and kind of the story of my infertility. So the story of me, it's pretty much just like a lot of us in this veterinary profession. I was that career woman. I was very goal focused, very highly motivated, high achieving. And I did what traditionally I thought I was supposed to do. I went to school, got 3 degrees, did an internship, started a career, got married, bought a house. But throughout this time, it often came at the huge price of my physical and mental health.
Yeah, that's definitely common for everyone in veterinary medicine, I think.
For sure. I never really even considered my reproductive health could be an issue until I was diagnosed with uterine fibroids in 2011, after years of worsening abdominal pain. I was basically in my internship, and there were times where I would have to run to the bathroom and cry, not just because I was in internship, HE double hockey sticks, but also because I was in excruciating abdominal pain. I went to the doctor, was diagnosed with fibroids, and at that point, I was told that before I could successfully conceive, I would have to have surgery. Now, this was back in 2011, mind you. And it wasn't until 4 years later in 2015 that I was able to go ahead and have that surgery. And post-op, I was told that I had 1 blocked fallopian tube and 2 dilated fallopian tubes, which reduced my conception rates by 50%.
Did they think there was a chance you could conceive naturally at that point?
So at that point, they said, we don't recommend that you try to conceive naturally because due to your tubal structure being dilated, there's a very high chance that you will have ectopic pregnancies.
Sure.
So at that point, they really were already pushing for me to go towards IVF. Quite frankly, it was just something I was not ready to hear at that moment. I wasn't ready to hear it. My husband wasn't ready to hear it.
We don't like to admit that we can't do things ourselves.
Right. Exactly. Not only that, but it would require an additional step where they would actually take my tubes out. So that was a huge point of contention for me. If my tubes are removed, there's absolutely no chance of me conceiving naturally.
Mm-hmm. And let me just go back. Why did it take 4 years to get surgery?
So this goes into a whole nother topic that I could talk about, which is financial infertility. So at the time, I had really, really terrible insurance, and I just simply could not afford it. So I ended up trying some conservative therapy, and one of those things was called Lupron. And Lupron is a drug that helps to shrink fibroids, but at the cost of it is going to artificially create your body to go into menopause.
Oh.
I was on that. While it did help with the abdominal discomfort, I was in surgery with a full gown on, full mask, everything, having extreme hot flashes, sweating like crazy. It was one of those things where it was like six and half a dozen.
Right.
But at that point, I just financially could not afford to have surgery.
Got it. So you finally do get surgery. And how does your journey progress from there?
At that point, I have the surgery. We know that we're working with 50% capacity. They're telling me, please do not try to conceive on your own. But my husband and I said, hey, you know what? We're going to try it. We know what the risks are. We're making an informed decision, and we want to try to conceive naturally. Miraculously, I got pregnant in 2016. Unfortunately, it resulted in my first miscarriage. Then in 2017, we decided that we would try again after we had a long break and did some traveling. After not being able to conceive for 6 months, we decided that we would have a consultation with the fertility clinic and go see a reproductive endocrinologist. Through the consult workup, we found out that I was pregnant again spontaneously. Unfortunately, that one also resulted in another miscarriage. So we decided that we would go forth with assisted reproductive therapy. On our third pregnancy, we got pregnant using a medication called Clomid, which helps to basically super ovulate you. I did get pregnant again, and that unfortunately resulted in a miscarriage. Mm. So while none of those were ectopic pregnancies, I still had infertility.
Yeah.
When I had the workup, I was ultimately diagnosed with unexplained infertility. It's just like in veterinary medicine, when we call something idiopathic.
No idea.
They don't know. They're like, everything else looks good. My doctor suggested that it may be an egg quality issue, even though we really couldn't fully prove that. Even when we got our embryo results, it really didn't suggest that. So maybe it was just the luck of the draw. Three times, unfortunately. It's just the way things go sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, that is the way things go sometimes. I mean, my first pregnancy resulted in miscarriage also, but three times in a row is a lot. I mean, that's a lot to deal with. How did you process that?
It's like, as it increasingly happens to you, it's like hope goes down the drain. So the first time it was like, this is normal. Everything's going to be okay. You'll try again and you'll be successful. Then the second time really sent me into a spiral. I became very deeply depressed. I became suicidal. I made a couple of suicide attempts secondary to that. I am one of those people who was actually saved by the suicide hotline. It was just a pain, just unbearable. It was just unbearable. I don't even know what to say. I don't have anything to say how I made it through that other than the Lord stepping in on my behalf and really just putting one foot in front of the other and not being successful in my suicide attempts. I really have no other explanation.
Oh, that breaks my heart. Were you sharing with friends? Or, I mean, I know we've been friends for a long time, but, you know, in and out of touch. And were there other people in your life at that time that knew you were struggling that deeply, or you didn't share that?
So the thing about infertility is that it's so isolating and so suffocating that you withdraw from other people. There were friends that I had that I talked to every day that didn't know that I was going through what I was going through. There were a couple of friends, very, very close friends, less than probably three, that kind of had an idea, but nobody other than my husband and I and really knew exactly what was going on. There were even things that I hid from my mother. And it was hard for my husband because he's, you know, while he's supporting me, he can't feel that pain that I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have those hormones rising up and rushing through his body to find out that there's no baby there and trying to reconcile your mental status, knowing that there's no baby in there and your breasts are developing mm-hmm. and you've got all these maternal hormones running through your body, but you know that ultimately you're not going to be carrying home a baby. It's difficult to deal with.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Ay, ay, ay. And did you feel supported by your doctors while you were going through this?
One thing I will say is that I felt very, very supported by my doctors. I had an excellent OBGYN who was the one who did my fibroid surgery. She was the one who immediately knew what was going on. And she's been such an advocate for me. She is actually a specialist in Black maternal health. I really owe my life to her. She, when I had my fibroid surgery, she made sure that I had my fibroid surgery on the same weekend that another Black OBGYN in the practice would be present, because she said, I want to make sure that you have somebody there that's an advocate that wants to preserve your fertility. So that was really important for me. And she was the one who recommended that I go see the reproductive endocrinologist. And my whole team over at Houston IVF was awesome. They really believed in us when I really had no hope. They were informative the entire way. They let us make our decisions, even though they gave us the stats and told us, hey, this may be a better option for you to go ahead and jump to IVF. They said, I understand that you aren't ready to do that. So here's something that we can compromise on. So it's really important that you have people who are advocates for your health when you're going through infertility.
I mean, yeah, let's just throw some stats out there, right? As far as not even infertility, but just pregnancy. So according to the CDC, Black women are 3 to 4 times as likely to die from pregnancy-related causes as white women. I want to pause there because, like, just you being you versus me being me, you're 4 times more likely to die during this process of fertility and or delivery, which is heartbreaking. And research shows that this spans income and education level. So it has nothing to do with where you live, where you grew up. It's just the fact that the color of your skin, the racial bias in the healthcare system, you are at that much more of a disadvantage than I am.
Yeah. And it's sad. It's sad because there are so many parallels between us two.
Yeah.
As far as education, socioeconomic status, etc.
Yeah.
Everything.
Actually, you have more degrees than I do.
Unfortunately, yes. There are huge health disparities that unfortunately are not on the side of particularly Black women. Some things that we know about research as well are that Black women receive proper fertility care over a year later than their white counterparts and have half the IVF success rates. So that's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
And knowing that, me knowing that going into my IVF and what the mental toll of that was. Mm-hmm. And Black women are twice as likely to have a miscarriage. Black children have twice the infant mortality rate. Mm-hmm. It makes me reflect to a quote from Dr. Courtney Campbell, which is, the malignancy of racism is that it does not care who you are, what your socioeconomic status is, or any of that. And that's the case when it comes to health disparities within the Black community. And these health disparities are largely due to pervasive structural racism. So there was a recent study that I found very disheartening, and that was that 50% of current med students believe that Black people feel less pain.
I mean, God, I can't even process that.
Think about that when it comes to pain management for Black women.
Right.
Who have just had C-sections.
Or epidurals. I know you had, didn't you have an experience with your epidural?
I had a terrible experience with my epidural. I had a white male anesthesiologist, and he did not believe that I was in pain. I was in so much pain, I could not even speak. I could not even say anything. When I finally was able to yell out, "Please stop," that was the only moment in which a nurse stepped into the gap and said, "Hey, should we just go ahead and stop and call her OBGYN? Come to find out, because I have scoliosis, he did not place the epidural correctly, so it went into the muscle.
And he just thought you were...
I guess I was just making it up. I was just being dramatic, was the impression that I got.
Right. Okay. Well, that leads into the continuation of your IVF story. So you get past some of your darker times and your miscarriages, and you meet with a specialist and then start the IVF process, yeah?
Yes. So ultimately, after a lot of conversation, my husband and I decided to start the process of IVF, and it was about a full year as far as the process was concerned, and by the grace of God, we were successful with our first round of IVF, and I was able to give birth last year to my greatest achievements, which are my twins, twin boy and twin girl.
Super adorable babies.
Thank you.
So you said it took about a year, and at that point you were not doing relief work. You were working full time?
Yes, I was working full time in a practice throughout this whole time. So that had its challenges.
Yeah. Even just like time off. I know just from friends here, the amount of appointments that are required. I mean, it's like, it's a huge time commitment to go through IVF. Did they work with you? How did that all go?
It really is. And I'll say to some extent they worked with me. To some extent they didn't. The thing that people, I think, fail to recognize is that it's not a sprint. When someone's doing IVF, it's not a one-week thing or, hey, let me take off to do this IVF for a week. It's not that. Like I said, it was basically a full year-long process. There were a lot of appointments I had to go to in the morning before work. There was a lot of challenges with that. So yes, to some extent, some of those days I was allowed to come in just like half an hour later than my work time. There were times when things were up in the air and they weren't as flexible as I thought that they would be, especially given the fact that I fully disclosed to them what was going on in the beginning. And I think communication is key. I don't regret that at all, because they need to know what's going on. And it really, it's your personal information as far as how much a person wants to disclose, and they have no obligation.
Sure.
But I did respect at that point my employer enough to let them know what was going on and prep them for future events that I might need to have. One of those is your egg retrieval. And egg retrieval week, you basically go in every day, get transvaginal ultrasound, and they evaluate your follicles until one day they say, okay, we're going to retrieve you. Be here tomorrow morning. And it's very hard to work around multiple people's schedules when you have something like that going on. Mm-hmm. At that point, I got a little bit of pushback from my employer, even though I had told them that was the case. It was challenging.
Yeah. I mean, I know for me, it's been a journey realizing that myself and my family are, you know, need to be number one priority. Is that a point at which you start realizing, like, I love veterinary medicine and I love my job, but I need to start having some boundaries for myself? Or you're kind of just in the thick of it at that point?
Basically a combination of both. There was a part of me that felt like, yes, I'm going to be my only advocate for my family. So I need to do what I need to do. And if that means sacrificing a part of this job or my ability to show up with certain things, then that's the way that it is. But by the same token, I always have this compassion towards my profession and my clients and my team. And I don't want to inconvenience anybody either. So it's really a tug of war the whole entire time.
Yeah, it's a hard transition. Luckily, you guys have a very happy outcome. You have two beautiful babies. And I know you went back to work full time and now have transitioned into relief work. And just for other working mothers out there, how did you make that call and how is it working out for your family?
So it's working out well. I will say that it was one of those things where fate just kind of stepped in and had me to make a decision.
Sometimes we need that.
But it came at the right time, really. I'm really enjoying being able to be here with my kids and seeing them grow up and develop and change every day. And that's a blessing that I likely wouldn't have had if I would have kept working full time. So I really, really appreciate having the chance to do that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the real flexibilities of being a relief vet.
Yeah. Yeah. We're lucky. You know, sometimes feels like we took on all this debt and work all these hours. But I do think it's important to remember that with our degree, you know, we do have flexibility if we can think outside the box. That's a little bit the goal of this podcast is for me to try to help people think outside the box.
Absolutely.
Another goal of this podcast is to increase joy in people's lives. And I always ask my guests, what is one thing that has brought you joy this past week?
One of the things that's brought me joy this past week, one is launching my YouTube channel, my IVF story on YouTube.
Yes, that's awesome.
And two, I would say one of the things that I was able to participate in this week was my Black Receipt project. That is a project that helps with financial and economic empowerment within the Black community. And between Juneteenth and yesterday, it was able to raise over $7 million of economic stimulation to the Black community by purchasing from Black businesses. So that I am really proud to have been a part of, and I hope that that continues.
That's awesome. And I know you love a good excuse to shop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at MyBlackIVFStory. You can also find me on YouTube by typing in MyBlackIVFStory.
Great. And I will definitely link to those in the show notes. And I'll link to some of the statistics we talked about and a few other projects.
Thank you so much, Stacey, for having me on here.
Thank you for joining me. And thank you for being so honest. You know, it's a heavy topic, period, let alone with everything else going on. I know.
Well, it's much easier to discuss when I'm discussing with friends. So I appreciate that.
I cannot thank Charisse enough for being so open and honest with all of us about her journey, her struggles, and everything she's been through, especially as a Black woman in this country today. I feel really lucky to call her my friend and to be able to witness her bravery. And I'm really sorry that I dimed us out for being friends for 20 years because that makes us really old. I'm going to include some resources in the show notes. I'm also going to link you to the resources page on the Whole Veterinarian website, where I'm going to try to include as many resources about anti-racism as I have been able to look into. It's certainly not an extensive list, but it's somewhere to start. It's where I'm starting. If you have any interest in joining me as an accountability partner for anti-racism work, please let me know. And if you have any questions, please get in touch with Dr. Sullivan Henry at MyBlackIVFStory on Instagram. She's really active, and I'm sure she'd love to start a conversation with you. Thanks again for listening, and I will talk to you guys next week.